Count Meehan Foundation is founded and majority managed by people living with disability and aims to provide the community with accessible public places and buildings. The organisation is having its official launch this Friday, and Director Rick Neagle joins us live in the studio to tell us all about it. Welcome.
Yeah, good evening, Lisa. Thanks for having us here.
So, Rick, tell us about why Count Meehan began. Where did it come from? Wow. How long has it been in the gestation?
It's been a few years. It was a concept that came up from the West Australian State Government. They owned a disability round of football. So the West Australian Government owned the Waffle back in, from some 20 years now. And I spoke to Helen Morton, who was the then Disability Minister, and she talked to the Premier Bartlett, and they gave permission for me to use the name in the SNFL when I was trying to lobby for a similar round of football in the AFL. And I guess that's the genesis of it all. And here we are now, trying to do more with it.
So Count Meehan Foundation launches on Friday.
We had a soft launch, International Day of People with Disabilities, last year. And this is more of a marketing launch. So we're getting some of the sponsors to be, and a few of the people on the board, of course, from the disability sector, and a few CEOs and the like. So we're just going to advertise it and put it out there and talk about it and hopefully bond with a lot of different other partners and see what happens. But at the heart of it, it's all about creating inclusive communities, and it's led by disabilities, people with disabilities, lived experience, and we're using the principles of universal design to get our mantra out there. So obviously the built environment is one of those barriers that exists, but as you would probably well know through your position at SACOS, that there's many barriers to education, health, and a whole lot of other things, transport, for example. So we won't just be in the built environment space, but I guess that's where we'll start.
Can you give us an example of what you think might be a project that the foundation might want to undertake?
We've had a strategic planning session with our board members, and one of the priorities came up about education in terms of letting councils and other institutions know that it exists, because sadly, no one knows what it means. And certainly the people in the council don't, because I've talked to them and they have their inclusion policy and don't even know what that really means. So sounding a bit of a cynic here, that word inclusion is, I think, a bit of a toss-away line now. Everyone has an inclusion policy. I don't think it works, and certainly doesn't work for people with disabilities. So let's toss the other word around and create universal design. And I think if we start using the word design without the word universal in 20 or 30 or 40 years, we would have made a difference.
So what does universal design mean then?
Easiest way is to buy a ticket to Norway and go live there for a month and find out. It basically means it gives access in the built environment to all people, from the age sector to the disability sector, mental health sector, making public spaces accessible and uniform for everyone. And the Norwegian government obviously have higher taxes there. It's a bit more of a social reform, but it works really well.
It's a really good example of what taxes can do for a country in terms of, if you do have those kind of high tax incomes coming into our governments, then in fact the opportunity to be able to undertake those kinds of public interest activities, like making our public spaces, let alone our commercial and other spaces, accessible in all sorts of ways, is really important. You would have heard that I was in Japan over the last couple of weeks, and one of the things, they're gearing up for the Tokyo Olympics, and of course there's a lot of anticipation, and with that comes the Tokyo Paralympics. I was struck by the already throughout Japan, and like in many instances, we saw lots of examples of where some attention had been paid to ramping, some attention had been paid to ensuring that there was tiles on the footpaths so that you could, you know, if you were visually challenged one way or another, you had some mechanism for telling where you were up to, and some of those things. And of course, so for that group of people, there was obviously some attention being paid. We do talk about the fact that we're living in a community now where our councils do have design standards that say that they're meant to be designing communities to be accessible. What is it? Are they just not accessible in the way that we all imagine?
Well, they're minimum standards at the heart of it, and it's just simply not enough. Kelly Vincent, Dignity MLC, has changed some of the planning laws. It's over a couple of years ago now, that at least get builders and governments and the like consider universal design, but it's not mandatory, and that's the issue that we have. And I do know from the Universal Design Conference that I attended a week or two ago that the Victorian state government, with every new build, make them universally designed. So it's happening across the border, and it should happen here.
I mean, presumably there's a broader advantage in using universal design principles as well, isn't there?
Sort
of, we're living in a community where lots of us are getting a bit older. Some of us are a bit older than others in the studio. But, in that context, you might anticipate that you might develop, if you don't live with a disability already, you might well develop a disability as you get older. So does universal design help in those instances?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you've just said is that disability can happen to anybody, anywhere, at any time. And at the end of the day, its principles actually help people and their families, because you're really looking after your elderly by doing that. And with an ageing population, and one that's going to, in probably 3 or 4 decades, people are going to reach 100 years of age, allegedly. So it's becoming more and more important. And it's also for families with prams and all sorts of devices. So it doesn't sit with people with disabilities. It sits there for everyone. And if you look at the heart of it's building that built environment then to make inclusive communities and get participant-driven people in the communities to bring everyone, Indigenous, LGBTQIT, multicultural. So it doesn't have to just sit at disability level, it's disability led.
And I guess that's the truth about trying to give genuine expression to the term inclusion, isn't it? It's not just about this group of people getting it okay, it's about all of us getting it okay one way or another.
It is, and look, I've seen some examples of it, how it's worked, and you mentioned what sort of projects we're going to do, and certainly education is the priority to get that message out there, but physically we want to be in the changing places space as well and try and help. I think there's been some amendments or some budgeting for changing places, moving forward, so we'd like to contribute that 20% that comes from the private investment. But looking beyond that, there's things like beach mats as well that we've seen successfully rolled out here in Adelaide beaches, and it's actually extraordinary because the day that happened, well, it's been 3 or 4 that have been rolled out, Largs Bay, Seacliff and Henley Beach. But the one at Henley Beach, there was 500-odd people there. And I watched this man. It actually brought tears to my eyes because he just stood in the water with his – well, he didn't stand. He had his wheelchair. And he flapped his feet for 2 hours. 2 hours. It was incredible. And I go, my God, he's never actually felt water before. And essentially that's what he said to me. So the experience of that, and if you build it, they will come, and sort of attitude is what we want to see. And unfortunately, we have still a lot of ignorance. If you build the changing places, people will come out. There's 11,000 South Australians that would benefit from that.
Now tell us a little bit about changing places, because I think most people can visualise what a beach mat might do, but in essence, a beach mat is designed to make sure that people who might be in a wheelchair can make their way across the sand and get to the water's edge in that process, isn't it?
It is, and the cost is about $10,000 for a suitable mat, which is inexpensive in terms of disability measures. But a changing places is a larger accessible toilet with a shower and a hoist and a change table loaded to about 130 kilos.
And why is that important, Rick?
Well, 11,000 South Australians would benefit from it. I have a lot of friends whose children are wheelchair users, and about the age of 4, 5, 6, they can't go out because baby tables are loaded to 25, 30 kilos, I'm not too sure, but eventually they end up changing their children on the floor.
So this is a group of people who might actually use things like continence pads and things like that as a way of managing your continence rather than being able to go to the toilet just by lifting yourself across to the toilet, which is what happens in many ordinary accessible toilet situations. This is a group of people who, for one reason or another, are relying on continence pads as a way of managing their continence arrangements, and therefore they need some place where they can go and change those
things. Yeah, and it's unhealthy to sit in a soiled nappy matter what age is, and just to say, oh, okay, we'll wait till you get home. Well, no. So the average period of time that people can go out who have complex needs, wheelchair users, is around about 2 hours. So you can imagine the burden not just on support workers but families. And generally what we hear from the community is that two parents, one child, able, if you like, one with a disability. One family member goes home with the one with the disability, another one stays out. So you get this, what would you call it, marginalised, franchise sort of family.
I suspect I'd be pretty ticked off if I was the kid that was being sent home just because I had a disability and I needed my stuff to be dealt with and I watched my sibling partying on or, you know, knew that they were off there continuing to enjoy themselves. I think I'd be pretty ticked off.
They are ticked off. And some of these people don't have the capacity to speak with a normal voice. Usually it's through some kind of communication device. But when you do speak to them, yeah, they are ticked off.
This is the reason why we not only need bathrooms that are designed so that you can get in and out in a wheelchair and there's support for you to be able to lift yourself out of your wheelchair onto a toilet and things like that. But we actually need bathrooms that are designed so that there might be facilities that would enable an adult to lie down or a heavier person to be able to be assisted to remove a continence pad and then replaced along the way. And that, of course, involves things like changing tables and that are, as you say, made for people that are weighing a little bit more than the odd child.
And the quick thing to say further to that is that the thing that prohibits a lot of these projects are the cost. You know, it's $100,000 rather than a $10,000 mat. But there are a lot of other simpler things you can do in the community. For example, the bathrooms these days, you see they don't have doors. You go in sort of a maze sort of approach. Well, that's accessible for people with disabilities. You don't have to open a door. Another thing is just simply down at Glenelg Beach or Henley Beach, people with dementia, they're looking for a toilet sign, so they go to the toilet. Well, where's the sign for the beach? Because you can't get back to the beach. Now, these things cost $50.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, simple things can be done.
So we've talked a little bit about what some of the challenges are sitting out there and why Count Me In might exist. Who are you hoping is going to back you? Well, who are your friends going to be?
Well, friends that are inclusive. And there's a lot of organisations out there, and you know, SACOS is one. We can give you guys merit, of course. Apps do great work in that space. But it's ones with core values that do live and breathe it and put people with disability at the front, not at the back. So it has to be disability-led. And I could name, and I'm not going to here and now because it's unfair on ones that I would miss out, but there's a number of groups that I do know with my experience over the last decade who I've managed to bond with, and you know who they are. But there's those people. There's, of course, governments, state government. There's grants, obviously, through that. The NDIS has the capacity for, through their information linkages and capacity framework, to deliver grants as well. So we've applied for a grant through the ILC. So our friends, basically them, and those who may be a little ignorant who want to change, our enemies, there are none, but people who are arrogant, we know who they are, and you just accept that and move on and just do your bit. One thing I do want to say, though, is that there's a lot of organisations doing the same thing, and I want Count Me In to be a little bit different to that. This silo mentality is one that you need to create and try to eliminate some of the bureaucracies behind it. And I don't think it can be led. I think it has to be pushed up from a grassroots approach. So I sort of see Count Me In being underneath, if you like. We'll see what the board thinks. Our strategic plan's moving forward. We've completed most of the first plan in 7 or 8 months. So we'll sit down early next year and review it and see what we do, what targets we meet.
And you've got a board made up of people with lived experience of disability?
Yep.
How many people on your board?
There's 7, and we've got a couple of people with lived disability, a couple of carers, one being myself, so we've got lived experience too, mm-hmm. in a different capacity. We've got a couple of people from the disability sector, CEO and another passionate advocate, my lawyer, and a friend of mine who has a lot of marketing management skills. So it's a bit of a blend, but we want to employ people with disabilities to educate, and carers, to educate the public and councils and educational institutions about what it means first, and that's what we're going to try and do.
And if I'm a cashed-up organisation out there, just, you know, thinking I'm looking for a charity to support, what's the type of organisation that might really be a good partner to something like Count Me In?
A partner from the disability sector, you mean?
No, not necessarily. I'm thinking more broadly. You know, is this something that, you know, some of those big housing companies could be thinking about? Is it in sense of the connection between universal design and the work that they do, you know, would you be open to an approach from a company like that? That was
absolutely. I actually have a project in mind that involves my house, in fact, which is falling down, funny enough, and it needs someone to pay me for the land value and come in and actually erect a universally designed place. And I was thinking, well, I don't want any benefit from that. Use it as a showroom. I'm quite happy to sit there and be the show person, if you like, for a year and sell it on afterwards. And all profits go to Count Me In, of course, which is totally tax deductible. We've got DGR status. So that is a thought I've had. I've approached a friend of mine who's a builder in that space. He hasn't given me an answer as yet, but I'm hoping that something like that will happen. And I think there's things like Metricon do some stuff in that space with MS. You know, that sort of idea is being talked about, and then I'll find a new house to live in.
Well, look, if anyone else wants to find out a bit more about Count Me In, what's the routine? They got to go just Google Count Me In?
You can Google Count Me In. It's www.countmein.com.au. My details are on there. Our office at countmein.com.au is there, and my phone number, so happy to talk to anyone about it. The more we talk, the better.
Indeed. So, look, it's a really, really important piece of work that needs to be done, and you're right, it needs to be done by all of us, not just a few of us. And the more we can share this responsibility with and convert people to understanding why it's so important, the better the world, I suspect, will become. So good on you, and best of luck.
Thanks, Ross. I'm just going to say that word share. The fear for people with sharing is extraordinary, and I don't get it sometimes. The whole idea is for the community to get better, and it's about sharing and not worrying who's owning it. So well said too.
We've been talking to Rick Neagle from Count Me In Foundation, just launching on Friday. Sadly, I'm not going to be able to be at the launch. I'm going to be somewhere else. But we're delighted to have you in the studio tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Rick.